by regulation in Australia, you need to do a annual check of fire alarms, and every 2 years you do a check of electrical and gas. So that's another professional service that needs to be scheduled to go out and do this. Well, you don't have that same inspection in Japan. You don't
You
need.
can't enter a tenanted property in Japan. That's something that people should know before buying here, right?
You're not able to enter it, you're not able to view it, and there's no ongoing inspection. So you have
Even
no.
when you're actually buying it and it's changing hands, if there's a tenant in there, then you're buying sight unseen.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so thank you for your huge patience with this long silence. I am now officially back in the saddle, or back with a vengeance, or whatever idiom you want to apply. And of course, super excited about our next summit coming up in less than 2 months in Tokyo. The venue has been confirmed. It's at the Harumi Triton X building in Harumi Triton Square, Chuoku in Tokyo. That's not too far from the old Tsukiji fish market, if you're living in or familiar with the city. Beautiful spot, spacious, full of light, perfect for a weekend gathering like this one. We've also got some info on our speakers roster, just to whet your appetite. We've got the usual suspects, of course, Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp, master of all things Tokyo and mortgage related, Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform, Tokyo's best bilingual renovation specialist, Tracy Northcott, the short-term stay queen, Matt Ketchum, the legendary Akia hunter and wizard of rural lifestyles, Anton Warman, master of DIY and fusion Scandinavian Japanese home design, as well as short-term stay host himself, and of course yours truly, and I will most likely be covering topics related to investment and general business practices in our sector, as I usually do. The Akia Mart boys cannot be with us this time around, sadly, and we've yet to confirm Alicia Wang, our investment loan expert. However, we have some new and exciting speakers lined up for you, and this list is still growing. At the moment, we've got confirmed Mr. Chai Kanda of Shiki Properties, who will speak to us about the property market in Kyoto, Osaka, and surrounds, share some exciting project samples, and probably get many of you very excited about the potential of these super popular and lucrative cities. Hiroshi Shimizu, JapanImmigrationExperts.com. He's an administrative scrivener specializing in incorporation in Japan and also an immigration lawyer, so he'll be unpacking those two very complex and fascinating topics for us. Matthew Kyle from WeConnect, who'll be discussing hiring, firing, payroll, labor law, all topics that many of you who are incorporating in Japan for various reasons related to your property portfolio and visas have been asking us about. So really exciting roster of new speakers. Go and check out their respective web pages in this episode's show notes. And again, as mentioned, you'll have many chances to pick our speakers' brains directly in the Q&A sessions and the breakout rooms, which were a huge success last year and will be a permanent fixture moving forward as well. So yeah, very excited here. Cannot wait to see you all with us, live or in the stream room. And since ticketing is just about to go live, you've only got another few days, maybe a week at most, to register for your early bird discount, which is well worth it. So hop over to our website, nippontradings.com. That's N-I-P-P-O-N tradings with an S, all one word, .com. We'll link to that page in the episode show notes too, of course. You'll see a huge link right at the top of the page to a registration form, which will secure those cheaper tickets for you, whether it's for one or both days in person or via the stream. The stream comes with a very active chat channel if you haven't participated before, which enables you to float questions live to the speakers and, of course, connect with other online attendees, which is really the next best thing to being there in person. So, yeah, this is the best, if not only, event of its kind, and we're thrilled that it's bringing so much value to so many of you. Most importantly, it's creating a live, vibrant, and super friendly community of Japan real estate enthusiasts with business connections that are created there go far beyond the event itself. And that happens again and again every time it takes place. So can't wait to see you all there with us Saturday, Sunday, 12, 13 April in Tokyo or online in the Zoom room on the days. All right, so for today's episode, Emil, Tracy, Blanca, and myself are also the organizers of the summit and all members of the Japan Real Estate Experts Panel, JREP for short. We got together to talk property management and related topics this time around. The differences in property management practices in Japan, how property inspections work here, the implications of Japan's unique tenancy laws on the practice of property management, long-term rentals, short-term rentals, who can manage property in Japan officially, who can receive and make payments on behalf of buyers, how does escrow work, and speaking of payments, and when property managers might refuse to take on a property, which does happen here, why does that happen? We'll look into the reasons for that as well. And then finally, we will segue into a small side chat about how each of us deal with bargain hunters and discount seekers, and why things cost what they cost here in Japan. So pretty interesting conversation, I thought. Hope you'll think so too. Enjoy the chat, and I'll see you again on the other side. Japan Real Estate Experts Panel is back in session. That last comment was very tempting, Blanca, but I'm not going to go there. And you want to do a quick intro? We haven't done that in a while, I think.
Yeah, sure. Should I start?
Please.
Go ahead. Okay, so... Hi, everybody. My name is Blanca Kobayashi, and I am the co-founder of Agriform, which is a bilingual renovation company serving Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, kind of the greater Tokyo area. And we can do all your renovations, whether it's residential or business. So let us know and we'll come and assess your project and help you with the renovations.
Thank you. Emil?
Hey, my name is Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, and I help foreign families buy a home in Tokyo. Mostly we use financing. So if you have a job here in Japan, employed locally, we can get you financing 100 or 110% financing, no money down. Interest rates right now, we're getting 0.345% is what the loan rates are.
I'm so still laughing.
They feel a little bit up from what they were a few months ago, but... still very, very low, very, very good rates. And no money down. It's easy win. So reach out if you are looking for to buy a family home. Tracy.
So yes, I'm CEO of Tokyo Family Stays. So I run a hosting portfolio of around 30 properties. Some of them are mine. Some of them I manage for other people. And actually, most of them I manage for other people. So I'm a property manager. So I've got a license for property management. And then each of the houses that are on the short-term rental market, so that's the vacation rental, Airbnb type things, they also have either ryokan license, so hotel licenses, or minpaku licenses. And so that's, again, for short-term rentals. So I'm an expert in the compliance, in also the property management side. And if you're coming to Japan, come and stay in one of my places. Or if you're looking to invest and you need someone to look after your place in Tokyo, I may be the right property manager for you, but I also help people monetize and be profitable if you choose to monetize using the short-term rental opportunities that are here. So that's what I do. Many hats, only one head.
And a software developer slash translator
I
expert.
am a software developer as well. So I run, that's why I came to Japan 25 years ago, which was to work with my brother to create software tools in language learning development. And we still do that now. So, it's not a startup, it's pretty long in the tooth, but it's just a really nice, stable, income stream that lets us play. And I really like playing in real estate, so that's why I got started. It allows me to have fun. So, freedom.
And Ziv, over to you.
All right, Ziv Nakajimam again. I found out last week that you asked ChatGPT. I'm apparently known as the Japan real estate guy, so maybe I'll try introducing myself like that. But my wife and partner Chikako and I have been running a Japan real estate consultancy for the last 13 years. We help people buy, manage, sell real estate anywhere in Japan for any kind of purpose. And not to say that we know everything ourselves, but we employ very good, professional, knowledgeable folks like everyone here on the call with us. And as of 3 years ago, we also have myself and another partner also have another company helping people with business investments in Japan and relocation to Japan, stuff that's not related to real estate. And we get together, we try to make it once a week. It's usually a bit less frequent than that, but twice a year we hold a Japan Real Estate Summit in Tokyo. Last one was in October, next one will be in April. And it is an absolute blast. And just before we got online, we were talking about a technology as it ties into real estate, but we don't have to stay on the topic if you have anything else burning on your minds.
Actually, let me touch on that a little bit, only because it's relevant in terms of the property management side. I have real estate in Australia, so the property managers use a property management tool, and so every time there is a like every month I get my statement, and it'll say these are the expenses. So any bills that I get, they go straight to the property manager, and they get taken out of the rent because I don't want to deal with it. And so they send me the statement and all the PDFs for whatever invoice they get, be it like a repair or an asset tax or water rates, etc. They scan it and it's all just on this portal. So you can go and see the portal and it has, the inspection reports and all that sort of stuff. Now, I know in Japan, some places do have these kinds of things, but like at our office when we do the property management, we largely like, it's just a monthly report. I just feel it. Japan does not have like the same amount of involvement. Japanese rental properties do not have the same amount of engagement from the owner and these kind of bills and these kind of issues that you have in Australia.
How do you mean involvement, like what?
I'm always getting like, in terms of always the repairs and maintenance, my Aussie properties don't get like my Australian properties are always having issues. There's always something. And because we do inspections, I think it's a 6 or 12, everything 6 or 12 months is a inspection, routine inspection. You go in and check everything's all right. So it requires ongoing maintenance. There's also by regulation in Australia, you need to do a annual check of fire alarms, and every 2 years you do a check of electrical and gas. So that's another professional service that needs to be scheduled to go out and do this. Well, you don't have that same inspection in Japan. You
You
don't need.
can't enter a tenanted property in Japan. That's something that people should know before buying here, right?
You're not able to enter it, you're not able to view it, and there's no ongoing inspection. So you have
Even
no.
when you're actually buying it and it's changing hands, if there's a tenant in there, then you're buying sight unseen.
Correct.
Yeah, there is nothing. There is nothing here because ever since our tenant moved in, we have not been in the house. And only if he would have issues, he would then report to the real estate agent, not even to us. And the real estate agent calls you and asks you or tells you this and this is happening. Are you going to take care of it yourself or do you want us to take care of it?
So yeah, and that's it. I feel in Japan the engagement or the the back and forth is very, very few and far between. So we don't need as much management tools. I'm okay with just like an Excel sort of data output because there's no long record of all the photos back and forth of every inspection report and whatnot. We don't have that so much. So I know there are some sites, like some places that promote we have this tool, like particular tool infrastructure for property management. But I think in Tokyo, my experience is properties don't need that level of management. I only get for my properties here in Tokyo, maybe is when a tenant leaves, they'll send me a notification. When we got new applicants, they'll send me a notification. And then the rest is just, oh, there's a renewal.
Well, there's pros and cons to that though, right? Because the I mean, you don't get hassled. I don't know if hassle is the right word. You don't have to be engaged or involved that much during the tenancy, but then when the tenant does move out, you'll suddenly see what was actually happening in there for the 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10 or 20 years. And that can, like, rather than, I would have sometimes preferred to have fixed things before they escalated rather than find out 5, 7, 10 years later.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a water leak, I think yes. But for other stuff, I mean, at that age, okay, let's just fine go in and just replace everything. I'm happy with that. That's kind of the, I just get the, you know, when someone moves out, I get the report saying this is all the repair stuff required to get it ready for the next tenant. It's just a quotation for all the, you know, the kind of renovation wallpaper, cleaning, air conditioner cleaning, maybe a repair of something that's broken.
I think that might come down again to, we've talked about this a few times in the past, the difference in the types of properties that you focus on and that a lot of our clients focus on. Because when we enter a property after a long tenancy, it's sometimes like a scene from a horror movie. And sometimes it's mid lease. A tenant absconds or disappears for any reason. Then we get there and we found out there was seven of them bunking in the property. And I mean, there are worse horror stories in other countries, but the lower end of the tenant profile or lower end of the income or whatever you want to call it can be pretty gnarly here too.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you who have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
I'm like a sandwich generation, so I've got I deal with, I deal at the coal face with the guests coming in short term, and then also dealing with the owners or the landlords on the other side. So I'm sort of sitting in the middle, and I'm
Your
really.
guests are not tenants. They don't even care about the property that much living there, right? Because they're not living there, right?
Oh, I've got medium-term rentals as well. So I've got people
All
that
right.
do rent. I only do furnished. I don't do unfurnished, which is what Emil was talking about. I only do furnished, and I only use a fixed-term lease, so a month-to-month lease for anything over 30 days, because that's, again, it's taxed differently. So the income on that is taxed differently. So I need that month-to-month fixed term. I'm not allowed to do the regular chintai, the regular rental lease, because I'm not a real estate agent. So But yeah, I do the ingoing and outgoing. And if any landlords are listening to this, there are so little horror stories for short-term rentals, because we have to keep them clean. They are cleaned between every guest on the hotel side, on the short-term rental side, and on the monthly side. I insist, it's mandatory for all of my long-stay guests to have a cleaning service every 2 weeks. So I get my cleaners to go in and make sure that there aren't 10 people bunking in. So there, I don't have any horror stories like that. So, a lot of people. It's kind of hard for me to find owners who will rent to me, because they're worried about, all these dodgy tourists or all these dodgy sort of short-term people. But it's actually a bit of a lower risk, because, it's my job to make sure it's really kept clean and make sure that there's no, weirdos and because the police call me on a regular basis as well. So the police call me and, they want to know, have I seen any odd people? And I'm legally responsible for everybody who is in the property.
And the
So
turnaround is much higher too. I mean, how much damage can they do if they're moving out in 2 weeks, right?
exactly. But also I keep security deposits. I keep security deposits, and then people, of course we get damage. And it's a lot of damage from the suitcases in and out, and so there's a bit more wear and tear on the floors, a bit more wear and tear on the wallpaper, etc.
Thank you.
But yeah,
Which is when you call Blanca.
that's when I call Blanca in.
I want to double click into something you said there. You said that you're not allowed to do a long-term tenancy lease because you're not a TACEN, right? A certified realtor. But
I
you
could be wrong, but that's what
No, no, no.
I.
I think you're correct, but I didn't know that you're allowed to do monthly leases because they also require a lease to be signed and explained officially, no?
Fixed term leases, like service department leases, not that I know of. Touch wood. Hope there's no one listening. But I have a standard fixed term lease that has been checked by a lawyer and has actually been made bilingual. And yeah, I. It gets explained. I have to explain it to people. So.
I think one of the big things with the agency agreements is whether or not you can claim a agent fee, çukay
Right, no, I don't
tesuryo.
do that.
So as a non-agent, you are not able to charge people the formal term of çukay tesuryo, which is
A
brokerage
realtor
or
commission, agent commission, yeah.
agent commission.
No, I do not do that.
Yeah, like for Pete, there are other charges, like so people that are not licensed agents can do a charge like a consulting charge or some other kind of fee, but within the understood general real estate sort of practice. So for example, if you consider closing costs for a investment property, the re agency fee of 3% is very much accepted and known. Yep, this is a very standard fee, and you can add that even into the home loan. Say these are the fees that I have to pay, and that's accepted. If you say, ah, there's another consultation fee or whatnot, they'll say, oh, this is not a standard,
Irregular, yeah.
irregular cost, doesn't fall in the scope of home loan closing costs or
I
home.
wonder if it's a bit of a gray area because if you remember Shun from Smartin, who was here on the podcast, we're working with him now on a few clients' properties, and he mentioned that he's not allowed to do monthly rentals exactly for the same reason that he's not a taken and he doesn't have. I mean, he can rent a taken if he really needs to, and it's a regular thing for him, but he doesn't have a taken, therefore he's not allowed to make leases on monthly rentals as well, which is fixed. But I'm wondering if it's a gray, like another gray area that I keep running into, not hurdles, but occasionally have to hammer out with agents that we work with, is some of the agencies. Emil probably knows more about this. Some of the agencies, for some reason, do not allow the agents that work with them to receive funds from clients for the purpose of settling a property transaction. Like the company policy or the company licensing of some sort or another forces them to ask the buyer to remit funds directly to the seller, directly to the Shihoshoshi, directly to the agent. Yes, but only for the agent commission. They're not allowed to collect the funds and distribute them domestically on behalf of the clients. Do you know anything about that, Emil? Is that a legal thing? Is that a company policy thing?
No. So at our office, our agency, we have a holding account. So, I've got a client looking to buy like 1.5 million US, for example, and they're looking to buy the holiday house here in Tokyo. And so what they'll do is they'll remit the funds to our holding account. Initially, they'll remit the deposit, okay, for the property, and then on contract day, we'll transfer that to the seller, and then the rest will be on the holding. The remaining balance, they transfer to our holding account, our company one, and then we transfer that on settlement day. There's no, there's no real issue with that, and even for taxation, when you have the transaction saying, "Look, this is just a transactional service, like it's a holding
Yeah, this is
account."
not our
We've done
income.
a
Yeah.
lot. Yeah, it's not income. I shouldn't be paying tax on this. I'm not. There's no the income. This is not revenue. This is a
Yeah, our
holding.
accountant is cool with that too. They never complained about it.
So I think if you have that very clearly defined, and maybe you've already discussed with your accountant, and that system is in place, it's okay. And there's no, we're not going to get taxed on just the remittance and transfer. Even for domestic clients that are purchasing a home, often you have to pay a 5% deposit. Now, walking into the office with 5 million yen or 10 million yen of cash is, 50 grand or 100 grand of cash. Some people have done it, but a lot of people are not comfortable doing that. So we say, look, remit their deposit to our holding account and we will transfer it on the day. And we tell the seller agent, we've received the deposit, it's in our account. So because we're a third party like agent, they're comfortable that we have the funds. The buyer is not going to just do something weird. Now, so yeah, in terms of tax, I think there's clear lines where, okay, this is not revenue, so there's no issues there. However, I think if an agency does have that policy, it could be because maybe they don't have the right processes in place, or they have come across issues in the past which they were burned by, so like we're not going to deal with it anymore. Or there could be a bunch of, maybe they don't have the right security in place. They think it's too risky.
I seem to be getting it a lot from companies that are sort of like Terrace are one of them here in Japan, and there's a bunch of others. They're like global or domestic umbrella kind of organizations that realtors join and pay a certain fee, and then they send work their way. So they're kind of like freelance realtors working for a bigger organization rather than being employed directly by an agency. That's where we seem to be hitting that policy. So I'm wondering if that's related to, like you said, they can't put processes in place for each and one of those freelancers who might be with them one day and gone the next. Maybe that's why they're avoiding it.
Yeah, in that case, so a big one for us, like whenever you receive a big funds like this, if we get $1 million into the bank always says, "What is this transfer for?"
Yeah,
And
always.
we show them the contract of sale and say, "This is the client, this is the purchase, here's the property, and this is the contract agreement." So that's why they're sending us these funds, and these are the costs. So the numbers just match up, right? When the story is true, it's very easy to provide the proof and the evidence. And we're a licensed agency. I suspect in what you said, where it's like an umbrella company, and everyone and individual agents can just sign up and use the branding or use their licensing as such, that an agency doesn't have a lot of oversight into the operations of the individual agent. So they don't know if the client is real, if it's just a money laundering, or what's going on. So if they
Some
start.
banks actually don't allow their clients to receive money from overseas. So there might be a different option also, a different issue also, depending on the bank you have. Some banks would not allow you to receive money from overseas
Yeah,
for.
that's still a thing in Japan,
Yeah,
unfortunately.
that's still a thing. We actually have that in some of our banks. And it was literally their condition, because right now in Tokyo area it's not that easy to get a company bank account. Like they take a very long time before they open a bank account on for you and stuff like that. And then some of the smaller banks will tell you, okay, you can have this bank account, but only funds from within Japan.
Yeah, I think they were scared a few years back. There was a big global scare about money laundering, and they took all of the head honchos of a lot of the Asia Pacific banks to a big conference. I can't remember where. and they hammered the fear of money laundering into them to the point where a lot of them are saying, yeah, we don't even want to check whether that's a legal transaction.
They were all participating in it.
What's that?
They were all participating in it.
Apparently, yeah.
That's why they got in trouble. No, like our office, we do that without a problem. We have no issues. But yeah, I can understand this, the particular structure that you mentioned, Ziv. The holding company or the agency above doesn't have the right structure in place to receive those funds, and then it gets chaotic.
Yeah.
I have heard there are escrow services that do that, but they take like 3%.
Yeah, they're ridiculously expensive in Japan. I don't know a single person that's used them.
Yeah, no.
Which is something, I mean, again, something we've spoken about in the past, but that's a bit of a headbender for a lot of people coming in from overseas, where we say, well, there's no escrow, but you can remit funds to the agent. They're legit. So it's a thing for Westerners.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Just before I forget, I want to touch back to the point we were discussing earlier about the rentals. Sorry to go on a big tangent. You said the nature of the rents and the clients that I deal with and I have experience with in Tokyo versus some in the other regions, you know, where the tenants moved out and you go in, okay, let's just renovate the whole thing. We'll bring it up to scratch. I was just thinking about that during the talk, and yeah, the rents we look at, like, 200,000 to, 500,000 yen a month and even more. So a renovation cost is like, or a repair cost is like 1 to 4 weeks worth of rent. It's like, okay, it's fine. But I think for some other properties in the regions is like, okay, you're paying 6 months worth of rent to do the same renovation, right? To re-wallpaper a place. And it's like, that's where, or do the repair for a rental.
That's often a thing. And that's why we keep telling our customers that you want, you said, Tracy, you get security deposits. We won't guarantee companies not security. Because how much security deposit do you charge, like, from a guest who's staying? Like, is it a percentage? Is it a number of days?
Oh, no, it's like 50,000 yen a stay. And that's just a hold on their credit card. Also, if it's a longer stay, so if it's like a 6 month, I'll hold one month's rent.
Yeah.
And I'll just hold it, and then it's all on the thing to say, as long as there's no issues, you'll get that back. And if anyone doesn't want to pay that in up in front, I'm like, okay, that's a bit of a red flag.
Already.
Yeah. So, because I don't take an agent fee, it's like there's no key money But it's just there is a deposit, but it's fully refundable. And for the short term, for people that are staying for 2 days to a week or so, it's like a flat 50,000 yen. I'm looking at moving to a damage waiver though, so I've got to think about how to run that. That's
That's not much, right? I mean, 50,000. I mean, 1 month rent is kind of typical in the industry on our end too, but 50,000 is not much.
Well, the only things that usually happen, and I know that's just a hold on their credit card. So, that's not even a, that's not even a like they don't even pay that and get that back. It's just that my credit card system can hold it. And that's for things like, oh, I've broken a lamp, or my kid wet the bed, or I mean, that's you typically what we have. The biggest one, we've actually just had it recently, somebody accidentally dropped a glass bottle onto a porcelain sink, and I had to have the whole sink unit replaced. I just sent them the bill and they paid it. So it was pretty, I mean, I've got a good relationship with my guests, and I don't usually have people trying to, do the dirty on us. If anything, people will go, look, I'm really sorry, but I broke a coffee cup. It's like, ah, it's all right, that happens. So I have a threshold of what I'll ask people to pay for. I'm not
That's
going to.
another big difference too, though. We have no relationship with our tenants. I don't think the property managers even have relationship with them because, again, like Emil was saying, we see them once, maybe once every 2 years on renewal of the lease, but that's it, right?
I mean, this is the part of the joy of my job though, is just that I just love hanging out with the guests or seeing them and meeting them and seeing Tokyo through their eyes. It just makes me realize how cool of a city that I live in. So that's part of my, the thing that I really love doing about this. So yes. But I'm a bit strange though.
We've got one client who's looking to buy. They're buying like an apartment building in Tokyo, not far from like in Setagaya, just up the road from me, actually. It's like on one of these no rebuild allowed lots, and it's this old rundown. It's a 6 4 or 6 room apartment, but it gets like a it's like what 300,000, like 30 to 40 million yen. Still discussing the price, but it gets about a 10% rental yield when it's fully
All right.
tenanted. The rooms are, but it's no rebuild allowed. It's a rundown dump, I think built in 85. Rundown dump, let's say dump. It's just old wooden rundown. Like, I mean, on the back, there's plants growing all up and vines all up the side of the
Oh, yeah, I've
building.
seen those,
And
yeah.
you try to pull them off, and they're like they've grown into the wall. There's a water leak in one of the upstairs rooms. It's like two of the rooms are empty. There's water leak there that all the wall is all rotted that needs to get done. Pretty much one of the shabbiest places I've seen. And they said, look, they want to buy it. And usually I think they started off looking at like $1 million properties, which is why I was engaged with them. And then that just sort of didn't happen. And then they've reached out saying, look, we saw this one online. Can you help us with that? And usually I wouldn't touch it, but because we were already
Yeah, I was
engaged,
going to say that's not exactly your thing, is
yeah,
it?
because we were already engaged, it's like, okay, let's do it. But I went and I had a look and I checked out the place and did an inspection. And I said, look, we're not going to do the property management for this one. Like the amount, like I don't think with property management, it doesn't make a lot of money. They take what's the management fee is about 5%. Okay, ongoing. And so on a 40,000 yen a month rent or 50,000 yen a month rent, it's not a lot. 2,500 per room per month. And then the nature of this property, that I think it will have ongoing issues.
Yeah.
So it looks like a good deal on paper. And I think overall it is a pretty good deal. It's unique. You don't find this kind of yield on a decent sized property with so many small apartments in it. That's close to the station, good area. That is in this kind of price point and this kind of yield. Usually they're more like, even a rundown place might be 7%. So 10% is quite good. But yeah, I said to them, look, I'll do the transaction for you, but we won't take over the property management. I'm sorry. It's, I think, too complicated a property to do good property management with.
We had a property manager refuse a property, like an owner change, refuse a tenant, basically. Just looking at the details, just saying that, you know, they moved in, they renewed the contract once, and then it kind of went automatically to automatic renewals, which is kind of, it's a thing in Japan. There are, you know, leases that automatically get renewed every 2 years, even though nobody says anything. It's kind of assumed that they renew, but this person renewed it and then stopped. They're still paying the rent, but we don't even know if they have insurance or not. And the existing management company was not cooperating. They were like, this is all on them now because they're the new management company. So eventually they said, no, we're not going to take on this tenant. We had to find one that was a bit less strict.
Yeah, we get that as well a lot. If, you know, when someone buys an investment property, if the existing property manager just wasn't doing a good job, and maybe there's no documentation in place.
Yeah.
We have a copy of the renewal, but no copy of the original lease. And we don't know if they have the guarantee, if they've redone the guarantee company. We don't know if they've paid the fire insurance. A whole bunch of just stuff that is, you have no idea what.
But rent is being paid every month, so it's probably okay.
Yeah, I'm sure the tenant is fine, but they don't even reach out to the tenant or contact. So we'll have to, if we do take it over, we need to contact the tenants and have them re-sign a contract. Say, look, we don't, or do you have a copy of it? We don't have a copy. Let's get it in place to secure everyone.
Yeah.
You know, terms that the existing terms.
And Japanese tenants don't like to be contacted for that kind of, for anything, but definitely not for that kind of thing.
That's why it's a lot of headache for the management company, the property manager. You can pick and choose. That's why, you know, if you, a lot of properties we have, it's, you know, 300,000 yen, 400,000 yen a month. It's a 2LDK couple, very professional in Ibis or Nakameguro or wherever. It's quite straightforward. And they come and they go, everything's well managed. But because the rent, the yen is quite high, the value of it is quite high, you can do all the proper management. I think once it gets down to these cheaper places and those old rundown places, maybe it was, oh, someone, the owner's friend will say, I'll property manage it for you, and they have no experience and no expertise. It just goes to hell.
Mm.
But our property manager actually charged more than 5% just because the rent for their property was only Juyoman, about 130,000, 140,000. So we end up paying 8 or 10%.
I'm all for minimum billables.
Yeah,
I know you guys all pick and choose your customers. You know, Emil does properties of a certain value. You do projects of a certain, especially if it's out of Tokyo, you're not going to take on something that's too small. And Tracy has her own very, very unique niche for guests. We kind of accept everyone, but we set our minimum charge at such a price that the real bottom of the barrel scrapers don't really want to
get us. No, because your time is valuable.
Yeah, and it takes the same amount of, actually, it takes a lot more work the worse off the property is. So, yeah, there's no point.
Yeah, I end up lately, like, you know, a lot of customers, they want to negotiate and they think everything can be done cheaper.
Mm.
But I'm like, you know what? I actually have to pay the people. So I end up telling people, you know, listen, this is the minimum. And if you are not happy with that, then I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I've been refusing clients, you know, even based on, okay, you know, you just want me to come and change something small that just does not even pay for me, my time to go and check your property and then time to send somebody there. So yeah, there is kind of a minimum, and I know it sounds bad, but my time's valuable. My staff's time is valuable. And, you know, you just have to choose. You have to choose your battles.
Yeah. Once you have staff, you don't really have the freedom to discount staff as much as you would have as a single operator, right? I can't negotiate this month's salary with the staffers because...
No, because listen, these people, if they are salary-based, you're paying salary for them, you're paying all the, like, you know, Shakai Hoken and all that stuff, you're paying for them. That thing is fixed.
Yeah.
you know, it's fixed and you have to pay them. I'm not going to tell, you know, my staff at the end of the month, well, the customer wanted a discount, so you are getting, you
know. You're getting 20% less this month. Good luck.
Yeah, you're getting 20% less. No, no. Because people, I want to get paid for my things. And the same way the staff wants to get paid. So, of course, if I'm having something done, I don't ask for discounts because I know that comes from somebody's pay. Yeah. You kind of have to know the prices about so you know you are not getting overpriced. But don't ask. And what I really, really hate is somebody will tell me, oh, but your staff, for example, if there's a project, then I have one of my foreign crews working on it. And they'll go like, well, but they are foreigners. They can, you know, work cheaper.
Oh, really?
Oh, no.
And I am very, very touchy on that subject.
Yeah.
Because somebody will be like, oh, because I have two crews that are, three actually, that are non-Japanese.
Mm.
And one and two of the crews are from Southeast Asia. And there are literally people that think that you can actually pay them half.
No, I'm extremely, extremely strict. You know, I pay my staff a living wage and I realize that I'm, you know, that I'm responsible for some fairly vulnerable people who also yeah. come from Southeast Asia. And I, you know, I refuse to discount their time.
Or, you know, cause I mean, and sometimes you send them for like, even my cleaners and stuff, sometimes, you know, the things they have to clean. Better. I'm gonna pay them. I even pay them more for cleaning gemba, for cleaning construction sites, because that's a lot of work, you know. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with heavy garbage. It's not. It's not. You know, coming to my house and clean my house.
Mm.
You're cleaning after construction, so they better get paid well. And the customer will be like, "Oh, but why is it getting paid? Like, why are you charging me this and this much?" You know, when they are from where they are, they get paid half of the amount. And I'm like, yeah, but they would get paid half of the amount if they worked and clean your normal, regular cleaning. It's not for deep cleaning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's our job. You know, we're very privileged.
Yeah.
We are very privileged. And, you know, it is our job to be responsible for vulnerable people. And I take that responsibility. Seriously.
And, I always say that, you know, if I don't do my job, there are people that will not get to eat, or their children will not get to, you know, do something that month, or you know, whatever. So I always, that's for me, that it's really the human factor of it all, not discounting people's work just to please a customer or get a job.
Well, I could probably earn a little bit more money if I didn't pay my staff as well as I do, but like, no, that's my values, and I'm that's what's good, is that I can actually like live my values, not just be preachy and not just like, you know, virtue signal, actually live, you know, like,
well, I mean, very practically too, in the long run, underpaying will cost you more in hiring and training, because people will eventually leave and you'll have to go through the whole thing all over again.
Exactly.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku, or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
I can understand, look, when people are budget conscious, they nitpick every line item and they see, okay, well, like, you know, our office does renovations as well. We only do it for our clients. So, you know, this coming Monday, we've got one client, they've got a big house and like, it's only for people that buy, so they bought a used place and they want to do the full thing redone, right? Interior, exterior. It's about 20 million yen is the renovation budget, Nisenma yen. So, you know, we spent going through it with myself, our renovation planner, and the actual, like, the on-site foreman, the technical guy. The three of us, we spent about 5 hours there when just doing walkthrough, before we even made the purchase offer for the property, just to get an idea of what can be done and all the changes, so we can get like a rough estimate. And then on Monday we're going to go to Shinjuku to, we're spending the whole day, like, so there's three, myself and two other staff, spending the full day from 10 to 5 at different showrooms in Shinjuku and maybe Shinagawa, maybe we'll go to Panasonic in Shiodome area. And so that's three people, that's just for planning before anything even happens.
Yeah.
And that's, so you've had almost like what, six people, three people over two full days, right? So that's six full days of work just for planning before anything's even started.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, to prepare the quotes takes forever. Oh, it's like,
so cool. We were talking about it in the group just last week. Blanca was saying that she gets a bit abused with the quoting, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then there's the the coordination. When you have a large scale renovation, you need to coordinate, carpenters and plumbers, and plumbers need to come in at certain times to do certain tasks. It's in between everything. And so if you look at just the wallpaper item or just the kitchen item within the quote, and you can jump online and say, I can get the similar kitchen for cheaper online, but that's a tradesperson who's doing only that one kitchen.
Yeah.
Not the whole overall project is one package. And when you want to have a warranty issue or a drum, who do you go to, right? Yeah. So I think that's part of it. And again, one benefit I have when it's in Tokyo, because the prices are higher, they can justify the spend and that extra. So they're not, everyone's budget conscious, but they're not budget clients.
Well, I think I'm not an expert on renovations, Blanca can testify, but I think when you're ordering something to be done as part of a larger project, then there's all the consideration of how will this fit into everything else we're doing here, right? It's not just the guy coming in from the camera and sitting in aircon.
You know, a lot of customers don't see it that way, because they would look at the quote and they'll see, because, you know, you kind of itemize it for them, and then they see, oh, you know, installation of a unit bath, this and this much money, and they'll tell me, oh, I think you can actually do it cheaper. They don't see that with that installation comes all the carpentry. There'll be two people, there'll be a carpenter working on it, there'll be a plumber working on it, because they have to be, so these people, they have to come there, you know, and do all that. And then before that, as Emil said, there's a lot of planning that ends up going into the quote, because there it's a lot of job to put this together. So it's not just getting on the internet and ordering the unit bath or ordering the vanity. Go and do it, but you don't even know what's going to come. Yeah. If I'm ordering it, I have to find the best one that fits you, and I'm also giving you warranty for it. You know, but people, they go online, they go like, oh, I've seen a vanity online from somewhere for 150,000 or 100,000, why are you charging me 250? Well, because I know what I'm getting. Because I'm not ordering it from some dodgy website And it's maybe it will come, maybe it will not come. You know, it's that kind of thing. So people, I tell them, listen, if you want to do it yourself, order it yourself, but you'll get no warranty from us whatsoever.
Yeah, if you go, look, you talk to someone like Anton Warman, who does you know, who's part of our group, and you know, you talk to him, this is what he loves to do, right? Because he does the work himself, he's able to sort of go on those auction sites and on those like spare parts sites, and you know, like the X display stock, and he can pick up some bargains. But then he knows what he's doing, and then he does, and then he does the fitting himself. So,
and he also does it for his own properties.
Exactly,
he does it for somebody else. He'll be charging them different amount of money.
Exactly,
he'll be charging for his time,
for his labor and whatever. I mean, and also he's almost labors of love, because he loves doing this stuff.
Yeah,
and it's fun for him to do this. So,
but he does that for himself.
Absolutely. So.
There's also the bit of the old adage there of, you know, why am I paying you so much for 30 minutes? You're not. You're paying me for the 20 years that I've studied to get to be able to do this in 30 minutes, right? So the reason that people pay for companies that do like a more holistic job is because they will help you avoid all of the very costly mistakes along the way, because they know what they're doing that you would have made it. You try to, you know, patchwork it on your own. Maybe
I had that with a client that he was angry that the guys charge, and this was a simple, very simple job, yes, but they had to come to the property. So of course, you know, they charged for a simple, just the basic fee, 35,000 yen or something like that. And he goes, but they had it done in 10 minutes.
Okay.
Yes, but that's just because whatever, that's not the point. They came, they spent that time, and there is a time coming there, you know, fees and stuff. I'm like, listen, they even gave it to you for cheap because they were going there for one more other thing. But still, people don't go like, oh, I'll pay him for 5 minutes, so let me give him 2,000-3,000 yen. You know, it's like,
and you can get those services,
unrealistic,
local,
you know,
handyman
unrealistic
who
expectations. Very unrealistic expectations. So I think when it comes to renovations, people have to realize that there are some minimal charges you will get charged, even if you know, the person is just coming to. Actually, a lot of Japanese contractors, they would charge you like 8,000-10,000 yen to come first to see what the problem is.
They do, right.
I don't do that. I don't charge them first, like, let me see. But I expect them to pay the workers at least for a full day wage if they come. Even if it's a, you know, an hour job. So it's quite difficult.
Well, let's, you know, on that note of going on site to like do a check and to see what the issue is. One thing I love about Japanese like household appliances and like washing machine, fridges and stuff is if I call Panasonic, if I call Toshiba, Hitachi to come and look at something, it's a 3,500 yen call out fee to come look at the issue. $35 for them to come and like that is so reasonable. And usually, like, you know, we'll do the thing within warranty, and it's always the prices are quite fair and reasonable. But I just feel that's great. Like if they in Australia, it's $120 just to come out to look at a ceiling fan, right? It's like, I think the fees are reasonable in Japan for these things.
As are the prices of properties. I mean, not the ones that Emil dealing with, but generally speaking, I think I'll have to go soon. I'm sorry.
Same here. Got a property inspection.
So they do happen.
Yes.
Thanks for your time. And
thanks, guys.
Good to see everybody. Let's catch up again next week.
We shall.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.